I think that the Grinch can steal our Christmas is in all the noise that surrounds this season. And there's no one more responsible for our just taking that time to reflect, to think about what this season is all about than us. Turning off the TV, turning off the radio, just taking some time. And that's hard to do. But if we don't do it, we can easily miss out on the message and the significance of this season. But there's a second, and just want to tell you two ways in which the Grinch can steal your Christmas. One is by just all of the noise of the season, but a second way in which this season can easily slip away from us is in all the materialism and all the consumerism of this season, that our focus gets off of God and gets on to goodies and gifts. Now, don't get me wrong, giving is a huge part of the Christmas season. I mean, it is really God's gift to us that we celebrate together. For God so loved the world that He gave His only Son. And it was the Magi who recognized that if God sent the Messiah to the world, that they should lavish upon Him gold and frankincense and more expensive gifts. Now, gift giving is appropriate, but sometimes in the middle of our gift giving, we get more focused on the gifts than on the giving, and on the goodies than on God. And that is a surefire way to miss out on Christmas. In fact, as a caution, I'd like to invite you to turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6. I don't plan to give this an in-depth study, but I do think the message that Paul gives to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6 is a message that, while not written for Christmas, is written for Christians about money. And at Christmas, so much of Christmas has become about money that these verses are appropriate for us. Just verses 17 through 19. Paul writes, "Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment." Paul challenges Timothy to warn those he ministers to, not to get hung up on wealth. He says it becomes a source of arrogance, and we see that all around us. People who think that they are particularly special because they have better paying jobs and live in bigger homes. That doesn't change our standing before God. Now, money is important. Important as it is to us, can really be an impediment to our relationship with God. In fact, what happens with money, Paul warns that we put our hope in wealth. One way in which we do that is by finding our security in our wealth. It is having that bank account and having those stocks and that retirement plan and being sure of the job and whatever it is, all those things give us a sense of security. And they're certainly not bad things. But ultimately, God wants us to have our security and our source of hope and trust in Him. I think when it comes to Christmas time, we put our hope in money in a different way. I think we put our hope in money that it'll bring us happiness. When I think about Christmas quite often, the way we approach Christmas is almost like the way a drug addict approaches drugs. We're looking for something to give us a quick high, something that'll be enjoyable for a while. But oftentimes, when that high is done, a person feels worse than before. Sometimes when we put too much emphasis on the stuff, and we put our hope in the happiness that stuff provides, we discover that it really disappoints. Because, you know, if everyone in this room has had the experience of having that longing for some sort of gift at Christmas. And you look forward to it, and somehow you discover you're going to get that gift, and you open up that gift, and you discover, maybe if you're a kid, you discover later on that day that it really wasn't quite as exciting as you thought. Or you discover a week later that that gift that you couldn't live without has been sitting in your closet. Or there's a way in which the happiness associated with material things is always short-lived. Again, it's not a bad thing, but if that becomes the focus of our Christmas, the focus of our lives, it's always going to disappoint when our hope is in wealth and the things that wealth provides. We're sure to be frustrated. So how do we counteract that? What do we do to make sure that we don't get sucked into a materialistic Christmas? I mean, after all, you know as well as I do that every voice out there seems to challenge us and encourage us to be focused on stuff and gifts and buying and receiving and all that stuff. Well, I think the next verse gives us some helpful instruction. Verse 18. Paul says, command them to do good and to be rich in good deeds and be generous and willing to share. There are a couple things in that verse, and again, I don't mean to imply that this verse was written primarily about Christmas. It wasn't. But the instruction that Paul gives about handling money certainly applies to us at Christmas. And it seems to me that one thing we need to be aware of when it comes to Christmas time is the danger of overspending. If you have found yourself fairly routinely in the past, coming to Christmas and feeling this pressure to spend and to buy for those people you love all the stuff you want to buy them, and then you get into January and you're paying off your Christmas, chances are you're overspending. It's wise to decide not after the fact how much you wish you had spent, but before the fact how much you're going to spend. Decide what you can afford. Decide how much you have. Decide where you want your money to go. Paul wants Timothy to understand that we should be willing to share. And so gift giving is important. But we've made the gift giving at Christmas time all about the gifts that we buy. I want to suggest a couple things this morning that I've been thinking about probably for a number of years, and found myself thinking about them a few weeks ago, that we can have a radical Christmas, that we can decide that we're not going to be like the rest of our society that has to try to keep up with the Christmas of last year or outdo the Christmas of the year before. But maybe we can make our gift-giving more significant without making it more expensive. A couple ways that I found myself thinking that we might be able to do that. One is just to decide ahead of time how much you're going to spend and decide to limit your spending and stay within that spending limit and be happy with that. And if you find yourself thinking, I've got more people to give gifts to than I have money to give, think of other ways in which you can give. Now, I realize that that there may be those who are going to think that's cheap. But if you have experienced the effort of trying to make a gift for somebody or to give a gift that comes from your creativity and your ability, you know that quite often it's a lot easier to give money or to buy something than it is to make something or to create something for someone. I mean, if we're really concerned about giving, we don't necessarily have to dig a financial hole. And if we're really concerned about giving, we may find that giving things that we give out of our strength and out of our abilities rather than out of our wallets has more meaning. A few years ago, 4 years ago, in fact, I started a tradition that I failed to keep up, but it was a tradition nonetheless that at Christmas time, one of the gifts I wanted to give to one member of my family was a Christmas letter. A letter in which I would express to this member of the family, just a different person each year, how much they meant to me and why they were significant. The first year was a pretty easy one. It was 4 years ago. It was the year that Carrie went off to college and that he was leaving for college in a few months. So I wrote the letter to him. The next year wasn't too hard. It was my mother's 80th birthday. So I addressed the letter to her. The following year, as we were sitting around the tree, it occurred to me I hadn't thought about writing the letter. I mean, it was too late. I couldn't write the letter. And I was feeling really bad, but then I thought, you know, probably no one will even notice. And several people said, so who'd the letter get written to this year? And I was really feeling pretty lousy. But then there was a letter stuck in the tree, and it was a letter that Carrie and Carl had written to their grandparents and their aunt. And while I'd failed to carry on the tradition, they carried on the tradition in what was the most memorable gift of that year. Now, some of you are very capable of expressing your feelings in writing, and that might be a great thing for you to do. Others of you, that just doesn't make sense for you. It's not in your gifting, but maybe there are other things that you can do. The point isn't to tell you what you should do, but just to make you aware that it is possible to give a gift that doesn't cost money, but takes some time and some thought. And you may well find that those gifts have the potential, if done well, of being some of the most special gifts. But, you know, when it comes to giving and thinking about how we can be rich in good deeds and willing to share, one of the dangers is that of our Christmases is that even when we're willing to share, quite often, Christmas can be very much focused, if it's not on me, it's on us. I mean, if you watch the ads on television, I find myself quite often wondering when I see the December to Remember ads for Lexus. Is this really encouraging me to give Sue a Lexus? Or is it encouraging me to hope that she gives me the Lexus? Or maybe I'll buy it for myself because I certainly deserve that. But either way, quite often our generosity is very self-focused. I mean, it may go beyond me to Sue or to my boys or maybe to some extended family. But when Paul challenges Timothy to be willing to share, I think there's a side of Christmas that many of us lose sight of, and that is that we have the potential any time, but certainly at Christmas time, to be able to share with people outside of our families. And I want to just throw out just the thought that if you and I simplify our Christmases a little bit, spend a little bit less money, spend a little less time in the stores, and take that time and that money and invest it in other ways and other people, that possibly this Christmas could be a life-changing Christmas for someone. I mean, it's theoretically possible, at least, that if we took 10% of the money that our family gives to each other at Christmas, and we scaled back our Christmas just 10%, and then we took that same money and we found someone who could use that money, and we gave that to them. Or maybe an organization that excited us to give to. Maybe this could be a Christmas. It wasn't just a fun Christmas, not just a warm, fuzzy Christmas, but a life-changing Christmas. Steve acquainted me last year with a catalog from, I think it was from World Vision. It was a catalog that had all these things that you could spend money on. You could buy a well for people in Africa, or you could buy a cow for people who needed a cow to for milk. I mean, there were all kinds of things, and it was so relatively inexpensive compared to what things would cost here. It was just a way of thinking beyond just me and my family and realizing that Christmas, if I was open to it, could be able to share with people who have significant needs. Now, I began to realize, as I thought about it, that in the materialism of our society, we become very self-focused and very caught up in what we can get. But perhaps we might be able to simplify things in order to give more. Maybe instead of giving money to someone else, maybe as a family you can sit down and say, who are people that we'd like to reach out to this Christmas? Maybe it's the next door neighbors, and we decide that the next time it snows, we're going to be there to shovel their driveway. Maybe it's someone who should be visited in a nursing home. I don't know. I'm not trying to suggest what it should be, but that can be part of the fun of Christmas. Sue and I talked about this a couple weeks ago as we were thinking about this, and we realized this has to be a family decision. I mean, if you're single, you've got one huge advantage this morning. That is, you can sit down and you can look at your budget and you can say, how do I want to do this? And it's great to start as a single with that pattern. Because if you are married, if you have kids, you've already likely got a pattern going. And you need to be careful if you're going to change that pattern. As Sue and I talked about, we thought, yeah, we might be very interested in a more simplified Christmas. I mean, we have some ulterior motives. I mean, we're the primary bill payers at Christmas. But we don't want our decision to make Christmas a little simpler, a little more selfless, to be something that our boys have to struggle with. So it needs to be something that you decide as a family how you're going to do it. You may need to phase it in over time. But it seems to me that if we don't do that, then what happens when Christmas is over is that Christmas has all been focused on the busyness of going out and shopping and buying stuff and bringing it back, and the momentary, though it may be for a few weeks or a few months even, happiness of stuff. And when it all is said and done, it's done. And Timothy says that there's more to this kind of giving than just the happiness of the season. In verse 19, he says, in this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. If you and I decide to have a more radical, selfless, simpler, servant-oriented Christmas, we're not only changing Christmas now, but we're recognizing that what we do here has eternal significance. Somehow, as I make these decisions, even in my purchases, I realize that the choices I make now have some sort of eternal value. Some years ago, Sue and I decided to get a Discover credit card. At the time, they were the one card that paid you back for the purchases that you made. Now other cards do that as well. But we thought it made a lot of sense that when we would buy something with the card, that sometime later, a month or two later, we'd get credit for certain things. In some ways, when you and I make choices at Christmas or throughout the year that are choices to invest in things that are not selfish, but expand God's kingdom, it's like buying with a Discover card. You benefit from what you do, and you also realize that there's a benefit coming. And more than whatever that benefit may be in eternity, there is the reality that when we make those kind of choices, we bless other people. And it may well be that this eternal treasure really is people. That the things that you and I do with our money bless people in a way that will mark them for eternity. So, in this season, there is a Grinch. Not one who's going to steal you blind, but someone who's going to inundate you. And it seemed to me that this Sunday, as we start Advent and we prepare to try to make our Christmas focus really Christ-centered, that it made sense that we might stop and take some time. In fact, quite honestly, quite practically, the most important thing you might do this week is to set aside time. Again, if you're single, just set aside time to look at your budget and decide what you can do with your giving. And don't spend more than you can spend. And if you're married, you may want to do that with your spouse, but then if you have kids, involve them. And say, how can we really make this Christmas a Christmas focused on giving? It'll change Christmas. I think in some ways it may make some of the extravagance of Christmas maybe not as exciting. But it may make Christmas more meaningful. It'll certainly make Christmas an investment in things that really matter. In Dr. Seuss's story, as the Grinch robbed the Whos of all that they had, at the end of the story, he is listening carefully to see how he has ruined their Christmas. He wants to hear the groans and the cries. But instead, as he listens, he hears the songs of Christmas. And he discovers that his robbing them blind has not stolen Christmas away from them at all. That they are fully able to celebrate Christmas nonetheless. And Seuss, who I'm sure didn't write this as a Christian testimony, said that as the Grinch saw that, his heart was expanded and he was changed. And I wonder, I just wonder in this season if we dare to be people who practice a radical Christmas, who dare to simplify things a little bit, to spend a little less time on all of the materialistic stuff and spend a little bit more time giving to one another in other ways, giving to those outside of our families, looking for opportunities to be willing to share with those that God puts on our hearts. Is it possible that people around us will have their hearts changed too? That they'll take notice that this act of giving within us is motivated by our love for our Savior, by a God who has given everything for us and so we can selflessly give to others? It seems to me that in this season, when people are very likely to miss the very message of Christmas, we, by how we live it out, have the potential to proclaim it loud and clear to a world that desperately needs to know. I hope in this season that you'll think about the Grinch. You recognize that he's out there. Make some time, just to have some time to yourself, some time between you and God, just to hear him. Let the silence allow you to hear his voice. And make time to anticipate the season, to live it intentionally, to give with true intention, that God might be honored and that people around us might be changed as a result.